Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Gettysburg Ghosts, a conversation with Dale Kaczmarek. If there were one place in the United States that one could almost guarantee any would-be ghost hunter to come across activity, it would be the battlefields of Gettysburg. With literally tens of thousands of souls lost in a period of just a few days, the ripple effects of the lives lost would forever change the lives of millions of individual family members of these soldiers across the nation, leaving a lasting scar or imprint on the land where these horrific battles took place. When exploring this area, Dale Kaczmarek has captured an utterly unique and at times shocking communication trend with what could be the souls of those who lost their lives on this hallowed ground.
Well, Gettysburg is one place I've always went to, seems like over and over again. I've been there about, maybe about a dozen times. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot to do with the battlefield itself, obviously. I mean, I kind of consider myself an aficionado when it comes to Civil War battlefields. It's one of the areas I really, really like getting involved with. The very first time I was at Gettysburg was back in about 1994 or 1993, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was able to meet Mark Nesbitt, who has written a number of books on the ghosts of Gettysburg. He was able to show me around, talk about a lot of the places on the battlefield. And then later on, we were able to do some investigations on the battlefield. Even though the battlefield and most Civil War places and national parks, they don't really appreciate us ghost hunters so much. Basically, the park is open till 10 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. No matter what time of the year it is. So typically, you could be out there until 10 o'clock in the dark if you want to do investigations, mm-hmm. Perfectly legal. And that's what we did. We began setting up equipment at different locations, some in particular that had a lot of violence. The whole battlefield was pretty much violent, but there were some areas that were much more violent than others, like the Triangular Field, Devil's Den, Little Round Top, Pickett's Charge, and places like that. And we began to pick up some really strange EVPs, some strange photographs. I actually talked to dozens of people that had been there in the past. I've actually collected a lot of material from people that were just out there taking ordinary photographs, and they got what looks like kind of hazy images of Civil War soldiers. And these are not reenactors, because it wasn't at the time when reenactors were going on in the battlefield. They're usually around the time of the battle, July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And this was like in the winter time, later in the summer, early in the spring. So it really began to spark my interest to try to find more information about this, and to obviously use better and better equipment as the times went on. When I went out there in 1993, I didn't have the kind of equipment I have now. So I was able to use a lot of different equipment during our last trip, which just happened in this past August. We were able to actually get out there, even during the COVID, safely, and conduct a very thorough investigation of several parts of the battlefield. In particular, again, we set up at locations that had a lot of, I would say, a lot more untimely death than any other locations. We had set up in the triangular field slash Devil's Den area. Mm-hmm. We went to a place, obviously, where Pickett's Charge took place. We also went to a place that maybe a lot of people just don't know about. It's called Iverson's Pits. And Iverson's Pits was a pretty interesting area. It was a location that was during the first day of the battle, where Colonel Iverson was supposed to be trying to find the Union right. And this was a Confederate outfit. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, as most generals do, they would lead by example. Well, Colonel Iverson just told his men, just, hey, go on out there. I'm going to be in the back of the battle here. And unfortunately, when they came up to a little rise, kind of like a stone wall, they got within, I would say, maybe about roughly a couple hundred feet. And a whole slew of Union soldiers popped up behind that wall and sent a devastating fire into the approaching Confederates, dropping about 50% of them in the first volley. It was pretty devastating. I mean, they were in a completely open field. They had no way to return fire or anything like that. And they began to surrender, literally. And later on, Colonel Iverson was relieved of his command because of that. Now, we had set up there on a couple of occasions because we got some crazy stuff. I was out there with a digital camera, and I like to shoot a series of fast photographs. You know, I like to call them like flash photographs.
Yeah.
They're not flash. You just take one picture after another and see what you can just kind of hold the camera steady and just snap it off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had five photographs taken looking into the field where this charge came from. And the first two were perfectly normal. The last two were perfectly normal. But the one in the middle, there was a blur that comes out from the left-hand side of frame. And when you look at it very carefully, and I believe I have that up on my website, you can actually see what it looks like, a chestnut-colored blur, which is very unusual because a lot of the Confederates were dressed in that chestnut-colored, tannish kind of outfits. I mean, they had gray, but a lot of them had this what they call chestnut color.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very unusual. When I reviewed my photographs immediately, I caught it. I tried some more. Of course, I didn't get it. It was like one of those, you know, you have to be there pointing at the right place at the right time, I guess.
Sure.
I can't explain it. It wasn't a windy night. There wasn't any leaves blowing around. I have no explanation for what caused that. But throughout the evening, we were, again, setting up with a number of people from my group and other groups that I wanted to kind of tag along, which we often network with other groups to go to places like this, especially, you know, big open areas. And we got a pretty amazing EVP at that Iverson's Pits. Now, we were using an S-Box, which is kind of like a spirit box. I guess what S-Box stands for. It's another variation of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a right where that stone wall was, there were a number of markers that kind of said, well, this is what this little company was, and this little company was, and this little company was from. And one of them was from the 12th Massachusetts Regiment. And we were doing an EVP session. A question was asked, where are you from? And the device said Boston, which is amazing because mm-hmm. Boston's obviously in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And the unusual thing about this is this happened when we played it in reverse. When we got the initial EVP thing came through, it didn't sound like anything. So a lot of times I will take it in my different programs I use for analysis, Audacity and Adobe Audition and others, to see if I can make sense of it. And you reverse it, and I tell you, it is plain as day saying Boston, which is pretty clear. We also got a voice in the background, and this was a disembodied voice that we actually heard that said charge, which is very unusual considering where we were at and what had happened at that location.
I want to stop and just ask a question to you about the audio that you got and Boston being in reverse. What do you make of that? Is that a common thing that you find in EVPs, that the audio is being picked up in reverse? Or was that kind of a rare thing?
It's kind of a rare thing. I first discovered that decades ago when I worked with a very interesting person called Sarah Estep. Now, Sarah Estep founded the American Association for Electronic Voice Phenomena, and she was a pioneer in the field. She would often use a open reel tape recorders to, do her EVP sessions.
Yes.
And sometimes use white noise and sometimes use pink noise, but she'd always try to do them about the same time. And sometimes she'd get regulars that she would call drop-ins that were there all the time. Now, she discovered that through many, many, many thousands and thousands of hours, that some of the replies did not make any sense until she reversed it. Now, obviously the only way you can reverse back then was that you took one of the reels off, you twisted the tape, and then you put it back on the reel and played it, so it would actually play that other, I guess you would call it side B or B side, in reverse. So you would actually hear her talking in reverse, and then you'd hear the voice come through forward talking with the response that was perfectly clear. And she had a number of these that she had picked up, which I have many examples. I was able to work with her on several occasions. I felt quite lucky before she died. She put together a book called Voices of Eternity. I was able to pick up and purchase a number of her cassette tapes at that time. Shows you how far that goes back. Of examples of this that she was actually talking about. So
the real idea is wonderful, and I've been actually trying to express that on the air for years, just having worked in radio for 20 some years. If you use a reel-to-reel recorder, and I'm wondering if she did this, and you could probably tell me, if you're using a reel-to-reel, the audio that is being then played typically through a reel-to-reel, there's a little speaker on many of them, it's delayed by a second or so. So you could actually, because I've said this, if you went out to capture EVPs and you wanted to hear the audio in somewhat real time, you could do that with a reel-to-reel because it's playing back the audio that it's recording. You're not just hearing it as a headphone would be. And so I've always wondered why, besides that they're giant and bulky, but the idea would be to hear the EVPs in almost real time, not necessarily having to wait and go back and listen to them later.
Exactly. The thing with the reel-to-reel tape recorders and even cassette tapes and even high-8 tapes and even DAT, what they call digital audio tapes.
Yes, DAT.
Didn't last very long, but it was around for a little while.
Sure.
All those, if you look on the box, it says magnetic recording tape.
Yep.
And magnetic recording tape is sensitive, obviously,
magnet.
To anything magnet or electromagnetic fields.
Yep.
So what we believe is happening in many cases where we get voices coming through on audio tapes, especially on either the reverse side or in real time that come through here, we don't hear them because the theory is that they may be bypassing the physical microphone and imprinting their voices and responses directly onto the magnetic recording tape. And that's something that's fascinated me for a number of years, because we have used portable, five-inch reel, open reel tape recorders, and going back to, like I say, the old analog cassette tapes and so forth. And we've gotten some interesting things on going back on analog and going backwards in time instead of going to the digital format, going back to the old school format, and very often getting some pretty interesting results.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.